Accession number 10165, reel number 43.
Martin McLean, reel 43. You were telling me about the second Div Battle School that was established at Armanaga. Did you, amongst the weapons that you were taught, had the Sten come in yet? You said it hadn't.
No.
It still weren't receiving.
No, the Thompson submachine guns had gone.
They'd been withdrawn,
yes.
Had they?
I found that there's some definite fault with them. Their ammunition, they weren't satisfactory. I don't know whether the other units and the other battalions had got rid of them that had them, or even if they had them. But Thompson's submachine guns vanished, and we had rifles and the grenades and the Bren guns. That was our staple weapon.
So you'd lost that sort of light, yes. Automatic.
Yes, we lost them all together. Sten guns didn't come in until much later on. Now, is it about this time that the when the summer weather was coming on, just prior to monsoons or the warm weather, the battalion was going down right, left and centre with malaria, and they couldn't cope with it. I'm not talking about our battalion, I'm talking about the four battalions that was there and the brigade headquarters. People were going down right, left and centre with this horrible malaria, which was a really killer if you weren't looked after. And it used to leave you weak and shaken and useless for quite some time afterwards. It was decided by the medical professionals, or the medical people in charge, to send us up to a hill station and put us through a course of anti-malarial precautions. So I moved by road to a place called Marbleshwar, which was a hill station for the Poona people, where during the hot weather they used to have their own homes, another home up in the hills away in the coolness. And we went there, and there was a huge lake there, and it was decided that every man had to be given a blanket treatment, as they called it. They had Meprican and Peprican tablets, which you had to take so many a day. And first from somewhere or other they got pure quinine. Now, I don't know if you tasted pure quinine. It's a bitter, horrible, miserable stuff. Well, part of my job was to ensure that every man, Jack, in the company, and the officers would be there, by the way, I'd check every man off my nominal roll, through past the people who are giving this quinine out, medical people, and every man would have a big spoonful of quinine down. And no such thing as a sweet or a sweetener to take afterwards. They just had that rotten taste in their mouth until they got the next meal. It was horrible. Well, we had about 10 days of this pure quinine. And lazing around, they wouldn't exercise because they realised that the battalions were played out. And the malaria was rampant in this. And they wanted to maybe quieten us down, get our temperatures down, and what have you. But we'd done so very little. We're all in tents now. And part of this expedition, just before we'd come up there, we got a huge consignment of beer for the battalion. They came in huge, big barrels, bigger than anything I've ever seen in England. They're about twice the size of the beer barrels we had in England. That's the big ones, like the one I've got in the bottom of the garden. Twice or three times the size of that. My company got two barrels of this for our Christmas consumption. It was getting near Christmas, so that tells you about the time that it elapsed from us going up in March to now moving up to Marbleshwar. The battalion decided to convey this beer up to the rest camp with us and have a Christmas party. So it was all conveyed in the army trucks. It wasn't so far away from our Wuppertal base, not Wuppertal, Armanaga base. It may be about 80 miles, 90 miles, so that no bother with the transports running back and forth. And they brought the beer, and they used to look after it, putting water, sods of earth on the top of it, keeping it cool, pouring water over it to ensure it got a nice temperature for when Christmas Day came to have this beer. And they brought a load of ducks in, and they had a little fella, Clough, a little fella called Clough, who was our ACC cook. And he adopted one of these little ducks, and he used to follow him all over the shop. And wherever he went, this duck was, or he was either carrying or whatever. But they brought lots of other ducks, which they put in a compound, and that was our Christmas dinner. And they brought them in, like, bamboo baskets with tops on, and all these heads of ducks sticking out all over the shop, and I put them away. That was our Christmas dinner, so we had the beer and the ducks to look forward to. From the malaria, from quinine, we went on to Mepricin tablets and Pemiquin tablets. Now, they were like a sulfur-like stuff and turned you yellow, your skin yellow, like a chinky. And you could see the blokes changing colour every day to yellowish, sallow, sick-looking. It stopped the malaria when we were up there because we're in a colder climate, and the colder climate wasn't bringing the malaria out. It was giving it a chance to subside. We're doing a lot of swimming in the lake, them who liked water. I loved it. And we found that we had a new replacement there called Diamond. What a swimmer. What a swimmer that boy was. He was earmarked for any crossings of rivers by me, that lad. And then eventually as time went on, all around this area there was jungle area. So we start training back on the jungle train once again. March, compass marches, heavy marches as time progressed, getting the men fit. Because then the whisper came out, we had to get fit because we were due for to do an amphibious operation away from India. The whole division had to do it. And we were spending no effort, no amount of money for to get us fit for to go into this amphibious operation. They piled in the money, I know that, because they looked after us, feed, food, everything, even the beer. Now, Christmas Day came and everybody looking for that beer. And it was horrible. The beer had gone off and nobody could drink it. After two big, we were looking forward to a good drink of beer. Because we got nothing, you know. We didn't get spirits or nothing of that nature. Beer was all we were going to get. The whole lot was bad. Then even the hardened drinkers tasted, oh, like vinegar. It was flunk. It was just drained off. There's no way could they redeem it. And that wasn't just our company, that was the others. Maybe all the shaking around had got coming up by the bumpy roads up the hills and hairpin bends up the Marble Ishwar. Then the
how did the meal go? Did the officers serve the men? Or
they do, that? Yes. The officers served the men, and then they served the sergeants. Then they went away to their own officers' mess for a bit of a do. Now, it was a battalion officers' mess on this occasion where they all got together. The sergeants still slept with the company and me. We still stayed with the company. We were just sitting on a bit of stone and a bit of grass, eating our dinner. We enjoyed it. It was a change, and it was a bit of festivity about, you know, and a bit of sadness because the men were realising their families at home were having a Christmas. There was one particular time when I was at one place there. I think it was like a hill station like Marble Ishwar. I was sitting, I was doing something with the ammunition, and the post corporal came up to us and handed us the packet. And then it was a little bottle of Johnny Walker whiskey from Manny's mother. And it was exactly my birthday. I was 28, I think it was on that day, and I had this bottle of whiskey, or maybe a bit older. It would be a bit older, about maybe 29. And I showed the lads it. It's one of the shoot us for it, where the sippers each of it. Anyway, after we'd been in Marble Ishwar some time, we ordered back to Ahmednagar. Ahmednagar, we was told that we're on the move. We're going down to Bombay for an amphibious exercise. They were going to bring all the equipment and materials and land and craft in and everything that we had to go down there for this huge amphibious operation, the whole division. Down we went, and we were put aboard a troop ship called the Dilwara, a brand new troop ship, made specially for the job. And we were standing at the side of the boat watching because amazed they had lorries in the water, that, you know, on the six wheels, the ducks running around in the water like launches, and little jeeps with the amphibious jeeps floating on all American stuff running around the harbour. And there was lots of them and all the landing craft ready for us to do a practice invasion on an island. Well, on the day of this Irish thing come up, on the landing business come up, I wasn't feeling too well. And I said to the company commander, I said, I don't think I'll make this exercise. He says, get away, Sergeant Major. He says, you're kind of the fittest man in the company going down. I said, I'm telling you, I said, I'm off colour. I said, I don't know what it is. Well, in part of this thing, we'd never done any practice at this, by the way, but when we went up on the hills, when we went on our first amphibious craft training on on the Angostura's Bitter, as the boys call the bloke, up in Puna Caravasla. I told you about the Caravasla Lake, where we climbed scramble nets. Well, all these new lads hadn't done any of that training. And the company consisted mainly of new people. There was very few of the older ones left. And the idea was we had to form up on the deck. I formed the company up, I remember forming them up, and I had to climb over these scramble nets down the side of the ship for practice into the landing craft and push off. And they had no landing craft practice as well, these lads, and push off to do an invasion. And I tried to climb this off the deck on over the rails on the side of the boat onto the scramble nets, and I couldn't get up over the rails. I couldn't get myself up. Mind, I was fully laden for war. No way could I get myself up. Then all of a sudden I collapse and I'm out. I get the stretcher bed as I'm carted away, and I remember no more until I come to in a part of a ship which was no comfort. It was just a steel sides of a ship, something like the forward part of a ship, and steel all round us, and a bed for me only. And people were coming in with masks on and looking at us. And doctors were coming in. There was an orderly coming in every now and again. I just remember this vaguely. I was out for the count, more or less. And I'd broke out in all sorts of flushes and red spots. Well, at that time, there was a peculiar troopship disease going around called spotted fever. And it was a killer. And it went through the ship like a plague, you know. And they thought I had it. Obviously, that's what they thought I had. And so they had me under observation for quite some time in the ship. And I heard all the quietness happening in the ship. The exercises over, the men had gone. I didn't know. But I was there, and then next thing I know, I'm in Colaba Hospital once again. I didn't have a spotted fever. And I found I had a severe dose of, a poison once again. Food poison. I'd been vomiting before I'd went tried to get on the boat. I'd been having diarrhea. And I didn't have time to tell anyone because I was out, and that was it. But it was so severe, they were worried about us for a long time. And I lost an awful lot of weight through it, and I went into Colaba Hospital, which was the hospital for the British troops in Bombay. And when I got well again, I was sent back to my battalion, very weak and very different type of man. Now, when we got back to Aminaga, the company commander is always pleased to see us again, some of the lads, not so much the ones that used to chivvy around a bit, the ones that didn't pull the weight, in my opinion. Got back to the company, and the company commander said, well, it's all off, Sergeant Major. I said, what? He says, the amphibious operation. He says, they found that the 6th Division, the 6th Infantry Brigade, is unfit for active service. And he says that the whole division has been withdrawn off it. Now, it all came out later on. You know how things transpire. They had to knock up a mock-up force for the invasions of Salerno. That was our aim. We had to do the amphibious assault at Salerno. And the brigade being so unfit that they had to cry the whole division off and find a makeshift body of people from all over the place to do the attack on Salerno, that amphibious landing. So we just settled down in Aminaga once again to the hard work, the hard training.
Aminaga was a hotter station, you know, than the hill station.
Yes, so much hotter.
Had the treatment, the malaria measures, had they worked, or were people still going down with it?
It had worked in a big way. We're still getting cases of malaria because there's various types of malaria. I forget the names of them. But I don't know if you know what malaria is caused through. They're like a midgey thing. And there's different sort of species of these midges. And they lay their eggs, and they have a long probe on the nose, and they lay their eggs inside your body, which causes the malaria. Or set something inside you. Well, there was different types of malaria, and some were recurring, some you just got it once, and that was it. But if you got the amoebic, I think it was amoebic, or medic malaria, it was a repeating one like I had. And you'd get it every now and again. Just when your body reaches a certain temperature or you're a bit down, you'd catch malaria. And all, I had it, I'd say I had it twice in England when I came home, and that was about the worst doses I had, because people didn't believe that I had malaria. And I was under army doctors at the time, but they realised I had malaria, and that was about the worst doses I had, but I had malaria altogether about 10 times. Now, this did weaken you and make you a less efficient soldier altogether.
Were you able to get your... you said quite a few times how important fitness was to yourself. Were you able to maintain your fitness in between these various, the food poison, the malaria?
No.
Or were you on a downward curve?
I was on a downward curve. I was definitely on a downward curve. I was one of the most enthusiastic of the with the seven-a-side hockey, or the five-a-side hockey, and the basketball, but I found I was dodging going out with them now. Not that I was unwilling to play with the lads, you know, with the private soldiers and what have you. It's just that maybe the energy had gone. I don't know, but I just dropping out of it. But I used to force myself to go out and play at times to be fit. The battalion had this cross-country run, and I was quite a good cross-country runner, and set off on a big run once. And it was everybody in the... Well, we had it... Every company had teams in. And I was determined to do well in this race. And I wore our red vest for a company runner. And I could see the lad who was the best battalion runner in the short distance from us, Buns they call him, motorcycle orderly. And I said, I'm going to catch him up. And without bummy load, I was a good cross-country runner because I was a cross-country runner before I joined the army for the Gates at Harriers, Gates at Congers. And I was also at the depot as a good cross-country runner and in the battalion. And I'd never tried myself out for years. And so I said I'd have a go at this race. And I was catching up on this lad, and I jumped from a high prominent hill into some quagmire down below, and I lost my PT shoe. We didn't have running shoes, PT shoes. And I said, oh, just a short way, run home, I'll run without them. And I run without it. But the spikes and the hard ground, I sharp it and knock back and go back and look for my slipper. So I came in about 20th instead of well up the front. And it was disappointment to me, but the cheer that come up from the lads, the company commander, delighted to see me up the front, you know, because they must have known that I was shamming a bit, you know, dropping back a bit. And the company commander was delighted to see it.
So how were you as fit as most of the rest of the men?
Yes, equally as fit, yes. I think we're all under the same boat, you know, under the same thing. Well, let's put it this way. We received some more new replacements. And them replacements were fitter than us. You know, they could go at it longer. And you could see the difference in between the men. Noticeably, but now you mentioned, yes, there's a distinct difference.
So, by your own high standards,
yes,
you were...
Yes, I was going back. Time went on, and then it was decided that the whole division would move off to Belgaume Jungles when Mountbatten had now come in the background somewhere along the line, and they were going to hold a huge amphibious exercise with commandos, with the second division, and it was intended to launch us across the middle of Burma from this thing. This is this what we got to know later on. But the whole lot of us were down there on jungle training and amphibious operation. They brought the landing craft back again, and it was all seaborne stuff we're doing, from sand, from the beaches, taken out and land back in sand. One coming off ships, the ships were in big demand, I should imagine, carrying troops around. In this Belgaume jungles, we marched for miles, I was getting as fit as fiddles. They give us rubber shoes, rubber boots. They said they were for amphibious purposes, or just like a sand shoe, but with tops on. And we're all kitted up in a green, jungle green clothing now. But it wasn't camouflage stuff, it was just green, as if there'd been the same sort of stuff dyed a green.
So it's still battle dress?
Battle dress, yes, with a blouse, with sleeves rolled up. And we also got green vests, green shorts, green shirts, so that everything was now as it should have been when we first went up the jungle. If somebody had more knowledge of jungle fighting, would have gone up that way in the
was
first.
Was this thing. Green the right sort of shade, or was it like the Japanese?
It was a good short sort. It was more like a deeper sort of green. Yes, it was a better type. we went up on these long marches and forced marches, 25-mile forced marches, no bother. And that's a full fighting kit with all your ammunition on and everything to practice for when you landed off the ships or off the landing craft. You went inland as far as you could before, you know, to take up what ground you could to form a bridgehead. And we used to do an awful lot of this. There was one particular time we halted. It wasn't a forced marches. We halted near a seminary, a church. And the battalion was scattered around this place. And I saw some gravestones. And I thought, I'm always curious on these things. That's my stomach rumbling at the record on this thing. I went and started having a look at the gravestones. And do you know, Durham Light Infantry, majors, and whole families buried in that graveyard. But the second day line must have been stationed there at one time, and it was the days when there was epidemics of different things, bubonic plague, all sorts of different things that used to occur to upset people and kill them, right, left and centre, black water fever. And on this one particular one I went to, a major, his wife, and his three children in one grave. And further along, a group of men in graves. All you could see it had been an outbreak of something that killed them off. Maybe smallpox, that was another killer. I never recorded this. I never told them, because after the war, they were interested in finding out these things. All I could see, it was in Belgium jungles.
That's 19th century.
Yes. Another... This was, oh no, this would be 18th century when these people died. It was the 18th century, definitely. It had the date on. Can't exactly remember. Another strange thing happened. Somebody knocked over an Indian and killed him. An Indian civilian with his clothing on and everything.
How had that happened? Were you there?
No idea. We just smelt it as we went past. And the smell was so bad and so giveaway. They asked for someone to go and burn the body. And our sergeant, medical sergeant, Sergeant Gunn, he was an ex-band boy, a little hard, well, big hard man. He says, I'll go along and burn it. And they took along a number of men and they got lacquery as wood for burning things on. Got wood anyway, and bamboo, I don't know what it was. And they put the body on near the roadway and set it fire to burn it, which is the Indian way of burial, by the way. It was nothing that they wouldn't be used within there if they were picked up by the family and burnt. But maybe they'd burnt them near a river or carried them away to the Gola Ghats or to Calcutta if he was a real Christian to be buried near the water. And the surprising thing about it, only a skinny Indian, and next time we went past there, the fat that run off that man onto the road, you know, it stained the sand and we were pussy-struck with it. It was decided to hold a big exercise prior to getting ready for this attack. And it was going to be a 10-day exercise in the jungle. Don't forget that we were now all living in company lagers, a company area, all round defence, in defensive positions, going on as if we're at war.
What did one of those lagers look like? Did it set out?
See, there's a company commander sets his headquarters, and then if it's jungle flat, he'd walk out and say, number 10 platoon, put your platoons here, your platoon here. Dig in all round defence. And he'd put another platoon over another flank and another one to rear. So we're all round defence. And they'd dig in, and company HQ would dig out in the middle, the stretcher bearers would dig, the runners would dig, I would dig, and the company clerk would have a place, the company commander would have a place. And that's the way we went on. But the answer was, in this particular case, being Belgaum, they didn't want any digging done in the area because they're going to use it over and over again for troops. And they didn't want them falling down these holes like they used to do at Catrick and break a leg or something. So all we done was we scattered out, shook out into all wrong positions, but we didn't dig in. One of the comforts we had was a little Nuffield well, as such. The only comfort we had, but the cooks were in a dried up riverbed. They had the Dixies, the petrol cans, were getting fed and looked after. We were to go out on this exercise that night, and we had Sten guns now.
When did they arrive then? Just before?
Just before we went into Belgaum.
Had you had any training?
Yes, we'd had practice with them, and they were a marvellous weapon. They fired a smaller pellet, a smaller round, and they were, as far as we could concerned, a bit of a dangerous weapon because they didn't have a safety catch on them at one time. A simple safety catch would used to work loose when you're if you dropped it or anything and you're able to shoot off. We found it a very good weapon, short weapon, just what you wanted for scattering rounds into a jungle where there may be enemy in front of you. Instead of putting your rifle up and losing the foresight and among the foliage, so these you could fire from the hip.
It was as you'd wanted with the Thompson machine gun, but this one was more reliable.
Exactly, a more reliable one, up to that point. More about that later. We were ordered to charge our magazines and rifles because there was a Black Panther loose in the area and we were going on a night exercise and if we were attacked by wild animals, there was lots of wild animals, we had to shoot them. And we carried these things loaded and all the time we were in Belgaum. And that was quite some time. We'd been there about 3 weeks, 4 weeks maybe. And then we were going to finish off with this big division exercise with everybody taking part. Finishing up with an amphibious exercise. We're going to do a lot of jungle fighting, a lot of jungle stuff. And it was all being controlled by the people in charge, maybe the division or the army corps people who's run this. It was going to be a big thing in the army, a big amphibious operation in Burma. The things went on that I was sitting by the Nuffield Weller set list in the news and it said, the Japanese have broken into India. They've reached Imphal and there's a bitter battle going on there and it looks like another part of the army has moved off and it's entering India via Kohima. And I start explaining briefly the news they had at hand for it was the British Forces programme telling you about this invasion into India. Things were looking a bit hot in my opinion. And the company commander came over and I said, exercise is going to be cancelled tonight. Just like that to him. Exercise is going to be cancelled tonight. Don't be like that, Samid. You're always over-cautious, you. Same as my previous company commander said it was. But being over-cautious always pays. And I said, I'll bet you, sir, that we are away packing up to get out here within a day or two. Maybe tonight, if this exercise goes on, I'll be surprised. Go away. The cooks were cooking the dinner. And this was early in the morning. The cooks were starting the dinner. You could hear the cooks working in this little gully where they were working. The secret mess was looking after them for a change. The company was all at rest now because we were going to take part in this continuous exercise over 10 days or a fortnight. I forget exactly when it was or how long it was going to be. And so there's no urgent rush for any movement around. When a runner came in from battalion headquarters, who weren't netted in by wirelesses, were just living in company areas with runners running back and forward. Runner come in, company commanders and officers report the battalion headquarters immediately. Company sergeant majors get ready to move the company out. Now, they didn't say whether we were going out on the exercise, but I just surmised that it wasn't for that. And then we asked the company commander, the company runner was where it was for us, and all he said is, we're moving back to Wuppertal, to Aminaga. So we had to go along and tell the cooks to dump the dinner and send out the platoon runners, the platoons, tell the platoon commander, well, the platoon commanders were away then, tell the platoon sergeants to get the men ready for moving off, equipped, see that there's no rubbish left around the area, clean up, and form up over here in the company headquarters, so that we were ready to move off when the company commander came. The cooks said to dump all the dinner and just tip it out, which there was no other way out of it because it was cooking on these petrol cookers. And within an hour, everybody was on the road marching back towards a real head where we were going to entrain once again for Aminaga. And in order to assist us to get there quicker, they whistled up some Indian transport from somewhere, Indian service transport, and to start ferrying the units to the station in groups. We couldn't all arrive at the station at the same time because the railway people had to rustle up trains. And they found that ferrying one crowd away at a time, get them on a train and off they went.